5:06. You're listening to Central Time here in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. An advisory panel that helps shape America's dietary guidelines has released a report aimed at lowering our consumption of added sugars and salt while easing up on cholesterol restrictions.
The Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee gets together every 5 years to suggest changes to our diets, and these recommendations help shape the dietary guidelines for the United States. Things like that you might have seen, the food pyramid, the current MyPlate diagram.
In the past, guidelines have focused on low-fat diets, but that's changed this year. The panel now suggests that Americans focus on the type of fat that they're eating rather than the amount.
Beth Olson joins us now. She's associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison and an extension specialist with the Family Living Program for UW Extension. Beth, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So one of the big takeaways from this thing, it seems like, is sugar. Sugar seems like the new nutritional bad guy. Am I reading that right?
I think it's getting more press, but it has been a while that nutritionists have been concerned that the American public consumes diets that are high in refined sugar, and not just the sugar per se. We're concerned that the foods, the processed foods that the added sugar is in, aren't as healthy as whole foods that we'd like people to consume, like fruits and vegetables.
So there's, I've heard some stealth sugar going on, things that we wouldn't ordinarily think of as sugar-bearing foods. If we're buying those packaged foods, there might be a surprising amount of sugar sneaking in there.
Yes, so we tell people when they're selecting foods to look at the food label. Added sugars aren't distinguished on the label right now for sugars from sugars that would be naturally occurring. So, for instance, in yogurt, it's going to have some sugars in it from the milk, but that is proposed now to be added. And so the other place people can look on is the ingredient listing and see if it has things that would indicate that sugar has been added to the food.
Now, I focused in on one particular element here, but part of the changing messaging is, it seems like, let's not focus on a particular food or a particular bad food, but our overall dietary habits, our overall nutrition habits. What's leading to that kind of change?
That's also been something that has been coming about for years. As nutritionists, we've been talking that way, but it's becoming more and more prominent in what we're saying. And I think we learned when we talked to people about being careful about how much fat they eat, we were thinking one way for them to work on that would be to eat more fruits and vegetables. But some people interpreted that to mean all fat's bad, and if I just don't have fat, my diet is good. And so instead of getting a full-fat salad dressing, they got a low-fat salad dressing or a non-fat. When we were really talking about their whole dietary pattern. And so indeed, this dietary guidelines considers whole dietary patterns, as did the last one, but I think is promoting it a bit more, that it's all of our foods together that we need to be looking at and not focusing in on one thing, which might mislead us a little bit.
So can you give us the big picture, Beth? What does a generally healthy diet look like these days?
So these days, about is diets that contain a lot of fruits and vegetables, that contain whole grains. So those are grains that contain fiber, like whole wheat bread and whole wheat pastas and oatmeal, and that are have less processed foods that would be higher in the refined grains in the sugars, and that you also watch that you have nutrients that come from dairy foods, particularly lower-fat or non-fat dairy foods like skim milk. So things like calcium and potassium and vitamin D, which we often don't get enough of, that comes from that food group.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of foods are maybe, what does Sesame Street call them, sometime foods that maybe we eat too much of right now?
Yeah, so sometimes foods would be much of the processed foods, particularly those that would be high in sugars and fats and not high in other nutrients that we need. So things like cookies and candies and desserts. None of those foods are bad foods. It just means if that's the main composition of your diet, you're not going to be getting a lot of other good nutrients that you need.
So a couple other particulars that seem to be changing are from what we've heard in the past. There's the eternal debate, are eggs good for us or not? And I think some people feel a little whiplashed by eggs good, eggs bad. Where are we settling? And it seems like there seems to be more and more consensus on the egg issue.
Yes, and the committee didn't necessarily address eggs in particular. What they addressed was cholesterol, and that's how eggs got, I think, an undeserved bad rap. There was a time where we were very concerned about heart disease and high blood cholesterol levels, leading to heart disease. But we've learned over time many things in our diets contribute to heart disease. And in fact, many people can eat some cholesterol in their diet and not have an issue with their blood cholesterol or with heart disease. And with that, we've seen that eggs, for instance, having an egg or two a day isn't going to cause a problem. One of the things we don't want people to forget, though, is sometimes foods high in cholesterol are also high in saturated fat. So that would be something like whole milk or certain processed meats, perhaps. And so this isn't a license to just eat all the fat you want, because now cholesterol doesn't matter. You still have to watch your total fat. But don't focus in so much on just cholesterol, and eggs are a great source of protein.
And as I understand it, there will be some people, some percentage of the population, who are strong reactors. I don't think that's the exact phrase, but who, if they eat a lot of cholesterol in the form of eggs, may have cholesterol problems. But that can be a case-by-case basis. It's not a general rule for all of us.
Exactly. And that's something people would want to check with their health care provider. That's why your health care provider often asks about your history of heart disease in your family, so they can watch for that kind of thing and see, by monitoring your blood cholesterol, if something like dietary cholesterol is something you need to worry more about, or whether there are other things you can do with your diet to improve your heart disease risk.
Now, you've touched on this a little bit, but I want to sort out a little bit fats that are good to eat, or we can eat a fair amount of them, versus the fats not to eat. What specific foods, when it comes to the fats, should we focus on and, you know, dial back when we can?
Yes, I think the committee did a good job in saying one of the things they didn't want to tell people was just not to eat some foods. Rather, they wanted to look at what you can substitute. So what they're saying is look at the fats in your diets and look at the proportion that you're getting from saturated fats. That's going to be animal products high in fat. And think about getting some of that from mono or polyunsaturated fats. Those would be the ones more in vegetable oils. So thinking about if you're cooking with lard, could you cook with a little bit of olive oil? There's also plant products like avocados, nuts, another category would be fatty fishes like salmon that have good oils. So the message isn't, again, to go crazy on dialing up all my fat in my diet now, but rather to look at the fat and say, let's look for some variety, include plant sources of fat as well.
We'll get into some more specific foods in a bit, but when we see these national guidelines, as you've mentioned, these are things that are constantly being reviewed by nutritionists around the country. So what kind of direction do these national recommendations give us as a society?
I think that was one of the big things that this dietary guidelines committee wanted us to think about, is we have talked for quite a while on the kinds of nutrients people need and the foods that they need, and some of that information hasn't changed. We've always said fruits and vegetables are good for you, but intakes haven't changed very much. So what more do we need to be looking at? And they really talked about how important it is for us to consider our environments and the policies that we have in place. They called it a culture of health. So let's make some of the default choices available to us easy default choices be healthy ones, instead of making it hard for us to find fresh, good, affordable food.
We'll follow up that point in a few minutes as we talk to Beth Olson, associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison, talking about some new national dietary recommendations that could change the way we eat.
And we'd love to hear from you. Will these new recommendations affect how you eat? Do you think these suggestions are helpful in reframing your diet? And is there anything about the suggestions that you find confusing that our guests might be able to help you answer? You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking about a new report that could influence America's dietary guidelines. Beth Olson stays with us. She's an associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison and an extension specialist for the Family Living Program at UW Extension.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about nutritional guidelines, about what foods to up in your diet, to maybe cut back on a little bit to improve your long-term health? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to a caller. We've got Carl on the line in Madison. Carl, hi.
Hi there.
What did you want to ask about, Carl?
Well, I got three things. I've got three things on my mind. Fermented grains, sauerkraut, and pork fat. My sister, who reads a lot more about this than I do, has been advocating these of late, and I'm just curious to know if these are trends that the speakers heard about.
Interesting. Carl, thanks for the call. Let's take the last first. More pork fat in our diets. Beth, I'm guessing for what you said about saturated fats earlier, that's not the trend a lot of nutritionists are looking at right now.
No, pork fat would be a saturated fat, and it wouldn't be something we would be telling people to add to their diet to increase the amount they're eating. It's fine if people are using pork as a meat protein food. We would ask them to look for the leaner cuts, so actually to encourage pork consumption that removes the fat from the pork or more so. But it is a good source of protein and fine to have in the diet. But no, we wouldn't be telling people to increase their pork fat consumption.
And then fermented foods, he mentioned sauerkraut. I've been eating more of that lately. I'm guessing there's no miracle, magical food that's going to solve all of our problems. But fermented vegetables like sauerkraut as part of our vegetable mix, is that a valid option?
I think it's a perfectly valid option. I don't think there is anything to suggest that they are healthier than other options. Now, the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Panel was still very concerned about the amount of sodium people consume, and fermented foods can be pretty high in sodium. So that would be something someone would want to check on a label of something like sauerkraut to see how much sodium it contains.
Another food that powers us here at Public Radio, coffee. I know the guidelines tackled that a little bit. What's the word on our beverage of choice here?
What the guidelines advisory group determined was that the amount of coffee that many people typically consume, that was 3 to 5 cups or about 400 milligrams per day, didn't have, as far as they could see from the research, any adverse health effects. And in fact, they suggested there might be some benefits to consuming some coffee for particular diseases. I don't think that they are encouraging people who don't drink coffee to start in order to try to improve their health, but saying it is certainly something that can be incorporated into a healthy diet.
So as long as we're not guzzling pots and pots of coffee a day, we can feel fairly comfortable with a moderate coffee intake.
Exactly.
All right, let's get back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Melissa is with us now in Madison. Melissa, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Melissa?
Hi, yes, I'm calling because I was recently diagnosed with gluten intolerance, and I was wondering how I can get whole grains in my diet if I can't eat gluten.
Oh, that's interesting, Melissa. Thanks thanks for bringing that up. Beth, a lot of people concerned about gluten, a lot of people with real gluten intolerance problems. What are the whole grain options out there for them?
Yeah, there are other options. I think gluten is high in wheat, and we have a lot of products in our diets, in the American diet, that use wheat, whole wheat breads and things like that. And so there are alternative sources, and one of those would, for instance, be rice. And so that's why you do see a lot of products that are being made now, instead of being made with wheat, are being made with rice. But it's fairly easy to go online now and look for products. What is, and look in the ingredient listings or find out those grains. What is important to know is now there are standards that are coming out for how those, particularly processed products, are produced. And for the labeling of them in order to say that they have no gluten, and that will enable customers greatly because for some people, even a tiny amount of gluten can be a problem. And this way they can be sure that the product they're picking that says gluten-free actually is gluten-free. The other important thing to remember is if you think you have a problem with gluten but you don't know, you should talk to your healthcare provider. You don't want to cut out a category of foods if you don't need to. And if you're having other symptoms that you think are related to gluten, but they're from something else, you would want to know that.
And with rice, brown better than white, I'm guessing?
Yes, brown would have the natural bran on it, so it would be high in fiber. One of the nutrients that the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee noted we are many of us are low in our diets is dietary fiber. It's important for our GI tract to work well, for chronic disease prevention, and the foods that it comes with, the whole grains and other products, have other nutrients that are important for health as well.
Big question, when we see these national dietary guidelines, do they change our behavior? You mentioned we've known for a long time more fruits, more veggies, a good thing, but we're not necessarily putting that into action. So do we need to change how these messages get out to us?
I think that we do, and I don't know that we yet know how to do that. The committee did make many, many suggestions related to how we could help enable those behavior changes. So the committee not only talked about what people should eat or watch in their diets to improve their health, they gave some strategies they feel are effective for people to implement those changes. For example, one of those was consume family meals. But then they also talked about the policy and environmental changes, as I mentioned before, that we should have put in place to make healthy options easier for people. So I think a very big recognition that behavior change isn't just about telling people something. It's about helping them figure out how to do it every day.
Well, let's see if I've learned the lessons here from this conversation. Takeaways, cut back on the sugar, boost the fruits and vegetables, dial back the saturated fats a little bit, but some of the lean fats, low-fat dairy, eggs, olive oil, not so bad.
Yeah, exactly. And look at your whole dietary pattern instead of focusing in on just one or two things.
Well, Beth, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Beth Olson, Associate Professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison, talking about some new dietary recommendations that could change the way we eat. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Today wrapped up Superior Days in the Capitol when people from the area traveled on to Madison to present issues important to Northwest Wisconsin.
Danielle Kading has been covering Superior Days. She's here in our Madison studio to share what's been going on at the Capitol building over the last couple days. She's a WPR news reporter based in Superior. Danny, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So what is Superior Days exactly?
Superior Days is a grassroots lobbying initiative that started around 1986 so that they could bring issues that are important to the Northland down to Madison and lobby for support in the legislature and also for funding for their local communities.
And who is it that made the journey this year?
Well, every year about 200 to 250 leaders from northwestern Wisconsin. Typically, it's Douglas, Ashland, Bayfield, and Iron counties that travel down. And they talk about various issues affecting economic development, transportation, health care. Usually transportation and funding are big issues in the budget.
Is there a sense in the region that maybe they get overlooked down at the state capitol and by state government?
I definitely think that that's why this initiative started, that people felt like their voices weren't being heard in northern Wisconsin. And so by coming down to Madison and getting in front of the people that make decisions every day here at the capitol, that they would have more sway, more influence, and possibly be on their minds when funding comes to be an issue.
I imagine every year there are different things that are on people's minds that take precedence. Was there a prevailing theme that came out of these this year's Superior Days?
I guess if there was a prevailing theme, it was that everybody realized how difficult the budget situation is right now, and looking at the proposed cuts, it wasn't that they were necessarily reluctant to ask for funding, but were realistic in what they would ask as far as support, but knowing that they have to ask anyway because these are issues that their communities just can't pay for.
Let's key in on some of the issues that they brought up. One of them on the agenda, I gather, was supporting a thriving forest products industry. What are they looking for here?
Well, they're looking for a lot of support from the state. There's a variety of issues affecting the forest products industry. One is transportation. They've seen a lack of rail service in the north since some lines changed over from Wisconsin Central Limited Railroad to Canadian National that was bought out around the early 2000s. And so what they're saying that they're seeing is that rail service has dropped off on some of those lines, as they just can't compete with some of the other demands that are on the rail lines, such as oil or the frac sand industry right now. They just would either have to pay a premium in order to get service, or that service is just not available entirely. And so as a result, they're moving to freight or trucking to move their product to market, which costs them more money. And they're also having difficulty finding drivers to be able to do that. So that's one issue that's affecting the forest products industry. Other issues include regulations that they feel are cost prohibitive. One issue that was mentioned was the northern long-eared bat and how they're trying to make that a threatened species rather than an endangered species.
How come? What does that change?
Well, that would have essentially limit the hours that they could get into the forest to harvest. They would have a limited time span throughout the year to be able to do that. And so basically it would just put more pressure on them to be able to cut wood.
And what is this bat?
The northern long-eared bat.
The northern long-eared bat. Okay, and this is a bat.
And it's a threatened species or an endangered species, and they're talking with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service about how they can address that so that they're not negatively impacting the forest management.
Well, another item on the table is funding for 911 service in northwestern Wisconsin. Is there already service? What are they looking to change?
There is 911 service. Obviously, it's being paid for. But the problem is that the way that it was introduced in a bill, I think it was 1987 or late 80s, and essentially it's a tax or a fee on landline phones. And as cell phones have come to be more and more common in the last decade or so, they've seen that drop off. I talked to Douglas County a while back, and they said that they get around 3,600 calls a year, and 2,600 of them are off of cell phones. And so they are not recouping the costs that they need to provide service for all the calls that come in, and so that they want to be able to charge on those providers and be able to retain some of that money, because that's falling onto the county budgets, and it's beginning to be difficult for them to manage.
Sounds like another issue that came up was the issue of raising the sales tax to fund local highway projects. How did that one go?
Yeah, this is something that came up last year at Superior Days as well. They're looking for a 0.5% sales tax increase so that they can fund county highway projects. Douglas County Administrator Andy Leshak talked about the need for that. They have 338 miles of county highway in Douglas County, and every year they get about $2 million that they can spend on road projects. And so what he says is that amounts to about 6 miles each year that they can improve. And so at that pace, it would take around 56 years to be able to upkeep it with all the highways there. And now some remain in better shape than others, but what they're asking for is more freedom to be able to use the local resources that are available, given the constraints on the state and federal budgets. As they've seen federal funding drop off from ARRA or stimulus funds, now they're looking to be able to go to a referendum and charge or again institute this 0.5% sales tax increase so that they would be able to have those funds available. They're looking for $25 to $30 million of that would bring in for them to maintain their county highways.
So there's a sense, it sounds like, that they're going to be falling way behind this. The idea here is this would help catch up with the road maintenance that they're not able to do currently.
Yeah, they're struggling to keep up with it for sure. And they gave the example that St. Louis County, just across the border in Duluth, Minnesota, has also gone this route to increase their sales tax by 0.5% so that they can also keep up. It's just something that's seen in local governments everywhere. And one thing that they mentioned, too, is that if they don't do this, then they have to go to bonding, and that increases their debt service, and that would go on the levy. And so basically that's going to up their property taxes. So it's either going to be paid for taxes one way or the other, and sales tax would help spread it out so that it would be borne by all people that visit the county rather than just the people that live there.
And speaking of roads, another thing on the table, the potential expansion of Highway 2. So first off, where does Highway 2 run?
U.S. Highway 2 runs basically east to west across the northern part of the state. It's a very big highway for the forest products industry, which is another issue for them. They'd like to see more passing lanes or a four-lane expansion. And they've had passing lanes added in recent years, and that's helped. But what they say is that along with that is that they can't bring in business because business wants to locate within 5 miles of a major four-lane highway. And so of the people that are even interested in located and developing in northern Wisconsin, immediately they just have to throw that out because that's not there for them. And another thing that they argue is safety. As we're seeing more congestion on the roads due to that decreasing rail service, that we need to have four lanes to keep traffic moving across the state. And DOT Secretary Mark Gottlieb says, you know, the justification just isn't there right now. You don't have the volume and capacity on U.S. Highway 2 to increase that to a four-lane highway. There are other more important projects in the state, usually in the central or southeastern part of the state, which is something that really irks people in the Northland.
As we wrap up briefly, Danny, do you get a sense from the delegation that they might see action on these or some of the other issues they brought up?
You know, Superior Days has been a really successful lobbying initiative in the past. They have been able to push through projects like the expansion of U.S. Highway 53, to a four-lane highway. So, you know, never say never. Anything can happen.
Danny, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Veronica.
We've been speaking with Danielle Kading, WPR news reporter based in Superior. She was with us to talk about Superior Days, which just wrapped up today in Madison.